This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه ثم أما بعد to proceed. So today inshallah we will start the القواعد الفرعية, the subsidiary maxims of اليقين لا يزول بالشك. we're now doing al-yaqeen la yazul bil-shak. This is the second major qaida. And we're done with the definition, and we're done with al-fawa'id and the benefits and some guidelines. And remember, the most important thing to get down here is the difference between yaqeen and dhann and wahm and shak, and the sort of the subtle distinctions between them, because they are treated differently. So wahm is the 1 to 49%, dhann is the 51 to 99%, shak is the 50%, yaqeen is 0% and 100%. 0% and 100%. That's positive and negative. Last time we spent the whole session on what? Ghalabat al-dhan. Ghalabat al-dhan is predominant assumption. It is called dhan in the books of fiqh, or ghalabat al-dhan. Ghalabat al-dhan, predominant assumption. Dhan is assumption, but it means predominant assumption. It means more than 50%. However, as we have said before, sometimes you have to be sensitive to context, because sometimes the scholars use shak to refer to anything other than yaqeen, to refer to anything other than yaqeen, other than certainty. So in this case, shak would include dhan, because it's just short of certainty. But when they distinguish between them, between shak and dhan, this is what they're talking about. And we will come to some applications here where we see how it is very consequential, that distinction between shak and dhan, between the 50% and the 51%. The distinction between the 50 and the 51% will be quite consequential, as we will see here in the applications. So today we will start the al-qawa'id al-far'iyya, what tatbiqat, subsidiary maxims and applications. So first, al-qawa'id al-far'iyya. The first thing that I wanted to say is you should be expecting, or you will not be surprised, when I tell you that most of al-qawa'id al-far'iyya, the subsidiary maxims of al-yaqeen la yazul bil-shak, start by al-asl. Al-asl. Al-asl would mean what? Default assumption. Original assumption. Default assumption. We say al-aslu baqa' makan ala makan, which we translated here as the default is the continuation of what was previously established. The continuation of what has been previously established. We have al-asl al-bara'a, clearance from liability. That's al-asl al-bara'a. Al-asl al-ibaha. Al-asl is permissibility of al-ashiya, of all things. And also permissibility of customary actions versus devotional actions. Customary actions versus devotional actions, which is adat versus ibadat. Okay, so let's take the first subsidiary maxim. Al-asl baqa' makan ala makan. This is a huge maxim. The default is the continuation of what was previously established. The default is the continuation of what has been previously established. This means what? Istishab al-madi ila al-hadir. Istishab al-madi ila al-hadir. Al-madi is present. Al-madi is past. Hadir is present. Istishab al-madi means that you pull the madi with you towards al-hadir. So the madi would basically carry over into al-hadir, or carrying over the past into the present, carrying over the past into the present. So whatever has been established in the past, it goes on, it continues until it has been interrupted. So the principle in al-qawa'id al-sa'diyya, and you're familiar now with al-qawa'id al-sa'diyya, Sheikh Sa'di rahimahullah. This appears, this qa'ida, to show you how tightly connected. الأصل بقاء مكان على مكان to اليقين لا يزول بالشك in القواعد السعدية. القواعد السعدية, they were combined together. So the Sheikh said, الأصل بقاء مكان على مكان واليقين لا يزول بالشك. Combined them in one قاعدة, in one maxim, which is the default is the continuation of what has been already established, and certainty is not negated by doubt. Combined the two in one qaida. So it is also expressed by the Hanafis as al-qadim yutrak ala qadamihi, wa-darar la yakunu qadiman. Al-qadim yutrak ala qadamihi. Al-qadim is what? That which has been established of old. You know, al-qadim means the old. So what has been established, or I say here, what is established of old is left as it is, is left as it is. Al-qadim yutrak ala qadamihi, left as it is. So we know that this house belongs to Muhammad. So it continues like this, yutrak ala qadamihi. He's been living there for 30 years, so yutrak ala qadamihi. But there is another maxim attached to this one. Ad-darar la yakunu qadiman. Ad-darar la yakunu qadiman. So you have a spout that is bothering all the people passing by in the street. It brings, you know, rain water on the people passing by. And you say, the spout has been here forever. I don't care. Ad-darar la yakunu qadiman. Harm is not considered old. Harm is not considered old, or harm is not, cannot be established. So it will be removed regardless. Okay, so this maxim aligns with a significant principle of Islamic legal theory, which is qa'idat al-istishab. This maxim, al-asli baqa' makan ala makan, aligns. We're talking about usul al-fiqh here, or what? We're talking about qawaid. However, there is, as we have discussed in the beginning, a relationship, a very intimate relationship between al-qawaid, wal-usul, wal-fiqh, and so on. So this qaida aligns with a qaida usuliyya, with a qaida in Islamic legal theory, or usul al-fiqh, fundamentals of fiqh, principles of jurisprudence, whatever, however you translate it, which is qaida al-istishab. In fact, that is what he clearly says in Sharh al-Kawkab al-Munir. I don't know if it is in your book or not, but anyway, it is very connected to qaida al-istishab. There are several types of istishab that Sheikh Saad al-Shithri, who wrote a commentary on al-qawaid al-sa'diyya. Sheikh Saad al-Shithri wrote a commentary on qawaid al-sa'diyya and mentioned several types of istishab, and I quoted him verbatim in the book because his breakdown of istishab is very beautiful and very comprehensive. So he says, istishab is of several types. Istishab is what? Presumption of what? Continuity. Presumption of continuity. So istishab is of several types. Presumption of original permissibility, that is, al-ibaha al-asliya. Presumption of permissibility, al-ibaha al-asliya, original permissibility. Everything is permissible until proven otherwise. Presumption of bara'a, a hallmark of Islam, signature characteristic of Islam. We're born free of sin, and we're born free of liability. Dhimma fariga. Dhimma would be translated as liability, individual liability, I guess. So fariga, empty, clear. So you're born free of sin and free of liability. You don't owe anybody anything until proven otherwise. That's presumption of al-bara'a, or individual's liability being clear of any obligations until proven otherwise. Presumption of istishab nas al-shari'a hatta yathbuta annahu mansukh. Presumption of a text's validity, the validity of text, until it's proven to be abrogated. Presumption of continuity of generality. Continuity of generality. Istishab al-umum. When you have a general statement from Allah or the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, a general statement, you shouldn't say, well, it may be specified. Okay, prove it. It is general until you prove it specified. You can't say, well, it's just a general statement. There may be specifications, takhsis. Okay, there may be. But we will act upon the generality of the statement until you basically demonstrate where the takhsis is. Then we have presumption of continuity of an existing condition. That is istishab al-wasf. Istishab al-wasf is to presume the continuity of an existing condition. If you have tahara, then we will not break your tahara. If you have ritual purity, we will not tell you it's broken until it is proven so. And then the last one is istishab al-ijma' fi mahal al-niza'. Istishab al-ijma' fi mahal al-niza', which is to presume the continuity of consensus. Presume the continuity of consensus. For example, if you make tayammum, and you're ready to pray, you're on your way to pray, and you find the bucket of water, you know, is your tayammum valid? Not valid by consensus. You found a bucket of water. So, okay. Now, you started the prayer. So by consensus, tayammum is not valid. You found a bucket of water. You started the prayer. Should we nastashib al-ijma' with us? Meaning, should we basically pull that consensus into the new circumstance or apply that consensus, let it carry over into the new circumstance? Some people will argue this. This would be controversial. Some people will say, we had agreed that seeing the water before making takbir invalidates your tayammum. Therefore, we're arguing, those who will take that position will argue that you need to prove that this consensus is inapplicable after they made takbir. But this is certainly a controversial issue. So some of the scholars will say, once you've made takbir, that's it. It's a controversial issue. But the people who will use this argument will say, نستصحب الإجماع. We will let the إجماع carry over into the new circumstance. Now, some applications. Distinguishing between doubt about the start of Fajr and sunset. So, doubt about Fajr and sunset. This is a very interesting, and this is where we can demonstrate the difference between Shak and Dhan. So, if you're doubtful if the Fajr time came in or not, and you continue to eat because you're doubtful whether Fajr time came in or not, did you break your fast? No, you didn't. Because al-asli baqa' al-layl, the default presumption is the continuity of the night until Fajr comes in. Continuity of the night is al-asl, the default assumption. If you doubt whether the sun set and you eat, whether it's Maghrib time and you eat, did you break your fast? You broke your fast. Because al-asl baqa' al-nahar, the default assumption is the continuity of the day. So you cannot basically break your fast on the basis of doubt. Here, it makes a big difference, assumption and doubt. Shak. Because if it is assumption, so doubt, 50%. Fajr, Maghrib. Maghrib. Here, you doubt whether Fajr came in, your fast is good. Here, your fast is not good. That is simply because you were doubtful. Not because you came to know that Maghrib did not come in. Even if you did not know that Maghrib did not come in, you broke your fast. Because you broke your fast on the basis of 50%. Now, assumption, or predominant assumption. Assumption, or predominant assumption, 51%. And I know it's a little cruel to say 50 and 51, because it is very hard for a person to sort them out. But I'm just telling you, this is assumption. You know, it's not two sides that are completely equal. You're somewhat more confident that Maghrib came in. Okay, so Fajr. Fajr, assumption. Now, you assume that Fajr, Fajr came in. That is predominant assumption. And then you come to discover that it did not come in. No. You assume that Fajr came in. Assume here Fajr came in. You assume here Maghrib came in. Do you need to repeat? Just assume, and you continue to eat, or you start to eat. Do you need to repeat? No. Your siyam is sahih. Your fasting is sahih in both cases. What if you come to know? What if you come to know you were wrong? You were wrong. You came to know you were wrong. When it comes to doubt, even if you did not come to know that you were wrong, you will repeat, okay? For Maghrib. If you come to know that you were wrong, you will repeat in the mazhab, because لا عبرة بالظن الذي تبين خطأه. There is no consideration for an assumption that was proven wrong. That was proven wrong. You will repeat. However, you know, Imam Abu al-Abbas Ibn Taymiyyah said, all you needed to do is to act on predominant assumption. Therefore, you don't need to repeat. What was wajib on you is to act on predominant assumption. Therefore, you don't need to repeat. Disambiguation? Yeah. The hunch could be 51. You know, doubt is when, you know, احتمالان لا مزية لأحدهما على الآخر. You have two possibilities, but none of them has any more strength than the other. It's just like, you know, I really can't tell. I really can't tell. Versus, you know, I know I prayed three rakahs. Why am I, you know, like, so anyway. It is very hard, but you feel it. You feel that sometimes there is the two possibilities, there is no tiebreaker whatsoever between them, and sometimes there is a tiebreaker. Like you feel inside that one possibility is more likely. But checking your phone is not, you know, that's quite strong. You know, like you really, like you can go by your phone because these apps are considered to be accurate. So another one, if a man dies and leaves two sons, one is Muslim and one is not Muslim, you know, who inherits him? A man dies and leaves two sons, one is Muslim and one is not Muslim. They both argue that their dad was on their respective faith. So the Muslim argues, my dad was Muslim, I get to inherit from them. And the non-Muslim says, my dad was non-Muslim, I should be the one to inherit from him. And this is really a demonstration of the justice of Islam. And these fuqaha were basically trying to follow, were extremely principled. They were just basically trying to follow the principles. They will give the inheritance to the non-Muslim. Why? If we can't sort out the deen of the father, they will give the inheritance to the non-Muslim. They will say to the non-Muslim, okay, you're saying that your father was Muslim, so there are two possibilities. Your father was original Muslim. Your father was a convert. If your father was original Muslim, then your brother must be Muslim as well. And if you say that my brother apostate, but this is a little bit different, because they will say that the apostasy of your brother in a Muslim country will not be left, you know, like unpunished. He will not be left alone to apostatize. So they will tell him, no, we will not believe that, you know, your father was an original Muslim, because how come your brother is not Muslim? Okay, had he apostatized, he would not be left to do so. Okay, so now, then your father is a convert. Then your father is a convert. And if your father is a convert, what is it asl? What is the default? Default is that he was not a Muslim and then he became Muslim. He was first not a Muslim. So you are claiming a change of of the status quo, a change of default. Your brother basically has the default with him. You're claiming a change of the default. You need to prove it. Your brother doesn't need to prove it. The inheritance will go to the non-Muslim. Another one, position which is al-yad, indicates al-milk wal-ikhtisas, ownership and exclusive claim, which means that when you are in possession of anything, any item, any property, it basically indicates ownership or at least exclusive claim, ikhtisas. You know, that this you have an exclusive claim on this property or item until proven otherwise, because it's in your hand. Assuming continuity of conditions, someone who's known to be wealthy comes in and asks for zakat. Zakat committees here, if you're on the zakat committee. Someone who's known to be wealthy comes and asks for zakat. What would you give him or her from the zakat? No, because you are presuming the continuity of the original condition, which is that they are well off and they are wealthy. The Prophet ﷺ said, حَتَّى يَشْهَدَ لَهُ ثَلَاثَةٌ مِنْ ذَوِي الْحِجَى مِنْ قَوْمِهِ. So until three wise men of his people testify on his behalf that he is, or, you know, nowadays, because it is the testimony of three people. Three people would say that, you know, no, we know he has gone through some struggles. We know that he had some hardship. We know that he had lost his business and stuff like this. So presumption of the continuity of the previous condition. Okay, among the branches of this maxim is another important maxim, but this is subsidiary. It is not, you know, so it is a branch of the branch. So الأصل بقاء مكان على مكان means what? إضافة الحادث إلى أقرب أوقاته, which would translate into attributing an incident to its closest possible time. So this principle is also expressed as al-asl fi al-sifat aw al-umur al-arida al-adam. Fault assumption regarding incidental attributes. Incidental attributes. If this is about, not about aqidah here, but so arid, incidental attribute, something that, you know, and is not inherent, is not thati. It is arid. So whatever incident and attributes, you know, the presumption is, or new occurrences, newly emerged, whatever, new occurrences, the presumption is they're non-existence. They're non-existence. So if someone finds, okay, this is a little bit, but if someone finds emissions in their underwear, like, you know, and they don't know when this happened, so they had, like, you know, they had, you know, slept several times in the past 24 hours, they don't know when this happened. Of course, they're required to make ghusl, but which prayers do they need to repeat? The prayers from the last sleep. From the last sleep. Why? Because this is an incidental occurrence, right? An incidental occurrence. So if you slept here, you slept here, you slept here, you're awake here, okay? And then you find the emissions here, you need to repeat the prayers from here to here, because it's possible that you had it here. Why shouldn't we say you need to repeat, to go back until you ensure, because in some other applications, we will say you go back until you ensure certainty, you know, that your ibadah was correct. We will not say this because to find witness in your underwear, emissions in your underwear, you know, al-asl, al-adam or not, non-existence, al-asl, the default is that this was not, the default was not existent here. But since I did find it, then I will have to attribute it to the nearest time, last time I was asleep. Okay, a seller and a buyer. So this is another interesting example. A seller and a buyer disagree over, and this is where we see competing qawa'id. Exceptions, as we said, al-qawa'id aghlabiyya or kulliyya. Al-qawa'id are universal or predominant. We said universal, not predominant. Even though some of the scholars said predominant because there are exceptions, but we said that they are universal until another qa'ida competes with them or text, you know, but they should be muttarid. They should be consistent. They should be universal in and of themselves. Here we have competition between two qawa'id. I sell you an item, you come back in 3 days and you say it is defective. There is this defect in the item. You are the buyer, I am the seller. We go to the judge. We tell the judge, I sold him this item, you know, without any defects. And he claims that the defect happened in my position. I think it happened in his position, you know, after he purchased it, when he took it home. So now the judge will have to choose between my claim and his claim. What will the judge say? There are two positions in the madhab. I don't agree with the mu'tamad. The mu'tamad, therefore, thereafter became what? That we will go by the buyer's claim. Buyer's claim. Why? Because that he did not receive the missing part. The default is that he did not receive the missing part. So if we say that the product was complete, one is arguing that the product was complete, one is arguing that the product was incomplete. So we will go by the claim of the product being incomplete, because incomplete is the default. Completeness is not the default. It's incomplete until proven otherwise. So I believe that the other position in the madhab is stronger. The claim that should be accepted here is the claim of the seller. Why? إضافة الحادث إلى أقرب أوقاته. This defect, this incidental occurrence, you know, so like, would it make more sense based on this qaida to say it happened in the position of the buyer or the seller? The buyer, because, you know, for the last 3 days, it has been with the buyer. So instead of going all the way back and saying the defect happened 4 days ago when it's still with the seller, we will نضيف الحادث إلى أقرب أوقاته. No, it's an incidental defect, incidental occurrence. It happened recently, and we should... what you want to remember is that the معتمد in the madhab is the buyer's claim, not the seller's. But anyway, it's not... anyway. So anyway, the next one, الأصل براءة الذمة, the next subsidiary. Okay, so we're doing two subsidiary applications today only. الأصل بقاء مكان على مكان, الأصل بقاء مكان. Okay, the other one is الأصل براءة الذمة. Now, the إضافة حادث إلى أقرب أوقاته is not a third. It belongs here under this. إضافة الحادث إلى أقرب أوقاته belongs here under this maxim. So, الأصل براءة الذمة. You know, the beautiful hallmark of Islam. Clearance of liability. You're born free of sin. You're born free of liability. You continue to be free of sin and liability until proven otherwise. Clearance of liability or براءة الذمة encompasses both the rights of Allah and the rights of His creations. You're free of liability, free of obligations when it comes to the rights of Allah and rights of individuals. In Sharh al-Kawkab al-Munir, it says, based on this maxim, the negator is not required to produce evidence, and the defendant is not required to produce evidence. Anyone who negates is not required to produce evidence. Anyone who, who's a defendant, who's trying to deny a claim, is not required to produce evidence. Why? الأصل معه. The default is with him. استصحاب البراءة. You know, continuity of, not innocence, but clearance from liability. Clear. I'm clear. Okay. Now, applications of this principle in avoiding liability due to doubt. If a woman miscarries, we're actually doing quite well in terms of time, so I need to slow down. I've been trying to rush through it because I was afraid I'm not going to finish, and now we will have like a lot of extra time on hand. Okay, good. So if a woman miscarries a piece of flesh, and trustworthy midwives testify that there were faint human features in the embryo, in the fetus. So someone punches a woman in the stomach, a bad thing, but you know, someone does, and then she miscarries a piece of flesh. The midwives, or now the doctors, will say, And certainly now you could figure out if this is a pregnancy or not much earlier anyway. But let's just go by what they're saying and understand the principle, and then application is a different story. So someone punches her in her stomach, and then she miscarries a piece of flesh. The midwives say that there are human features in this. So this was a fetus. This was a fetus. Then compensation, which is al-ghurra, will be required of the, you know, aggressor. Now, if they say that were in doubt, had this stayed in, it would have had human features maybe next week, in 2 weeks, and so on. Will we require the aggressor to pay al-ghurra based on that doubt? No, we will not. Because al-asl al-bara'a. So the default is clearance from liability. clear from liability. Will they be punished for punching her? Of course, but they will not be required to pay compensation for the fetus because it was a matter of doubt. Nowadays, it's not doubtful. And so anyway, the next example is if a man runs, and certainly there is like a, there are two views in the madhab, whether we will pay, we will require the person of to pay the compensation, even with doubt. The stronger view is no compensation, and their argument is al-asl al-bara'a, clearance from liability. If a man runs his fingers through his hair and a hair falls out, okay, so you have now a muhrim who runs his fingers through their hair or combs their hair and hair falls out. You know, were these, this people used to make a big deal out of this, by the way. You know, you shouldn't, you don't have a problem. but people, like, because people used to be very, quite obsessive about this. Now, keep in mind that three hairs need to fall for the fidya, the complete fidya, but then one hair is one mud of ta'am to a miskeen, and two hairs is two muds, one mud or two, or half a sa'a. It's, you know, controversial, but anyway. So there will be expiation for hair falling. Which hair? Hair that is alive, or living, I guess, not dead. What if you doubt whether the hair is alive or dead? Al-asl al-bara'a. You know, the default is clearance from liability. And that should give you a lot, you know, a lot of sort of ease. That, you know, if you say that likely this was dead, because to separate between dead hair and living hair is not that easy. But, they used to not play with their hair, by the way, when they were muhrim. They just leave it alone. But then hair falls. If you don't have predominant assumption that this hair was living and not dead, then you're doubting. You have two possibilities without, you know, one outweighing the other, without one outweighing the other. You go by which one? Bara'a. Clear from liability. You're clear from liability, so you don't have to expiate. It's also worth noting that the madhab takes a precautionary approach concerning acts of worship. So concerning acts of worship, the madhab takes a precautionary approach. So when we say, did I pray two or three rak'ahs? The madhab says what? Two rak'ahs. Why? Because al-asl al-itmam, you know, default is that you're required to complete your act of worship. And you need to ensure that you have completed your act of worship. Al-asl al-itmam. And we don't know if you did the third rak'ah or not. So you have become liable. You can't argue that the default is non-liability, because you have become liable. Liable for what? Liable for four rak'ahs. So, you know, you need to ensure that you do the four rak'ahs. Now you're not sure if you did the third or not. Repeat it. That's the madhab, you know, and certainly in the madhab also, some would go by predominant assumption. If you have predominant assumption, by agreement, if it is doubt, if it is 50-50, you need to repeat it. You need to do the third rak'ah by consensus, okay? The question comes when it's not 50-50. It's 80-20, and sometimes 95% and 5%. 95% I prayed three rak'ahs. But in the madhab, they treat dhan as shak here. They will tell you, repeat the rak'ah. repeat the rak'ah. Okay, what are other examples? If you combine between adar and safar, if you combine between two conditions, adar and safar, being a traveler and being a resident, and let us say, if you leave before you pray dhuhr, you know, and now you're traveling, but dhuhr became, you became liable for dhuhr when you were a resident, do you pray four or two? Four. If vice versa, if you became liable for dhuhr when you are a traveler, you arrive at home, you pray four or two? Four. Why? Because, you know, itmam takes priority here. You know, tahtat lil ibadah, ensure that your ibadah is complete, takes priority. So if you have combined the two conditions, you will be treated as a resident. If you wipe on your socks before you leave, and then you're traveling, how many days do you have? One. If you arrive on the second day, if you arrive at home on the second day, can you finish your 3 days? No. One. You know, so you have to stop now wiping because we will give precedence to the default of the requirement to complete and fulfill your act of worship. And that actually brings us to the end of today's session. Yeah, of course. One. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you straddle the two conditions, travel and residence, and you know, you would favor residence over traveling, you will go by the rulings of the resident, not the traveler. You'll go by the rulings of the resident, not the traveler. Yes. Yes. There is a well that the property would go to.
No, the well was covered over.
No.
Doesn't know that it's there, but it was evaluated. But it wasn't. So, does the person ask? In terms of if he makes a claim.
So if we can figure out when the defect existed, then we will go by this. So if we can verify that the defect existed with the buyer, and where it's not a matter of guessing, we can verify that the defect existed with the seller, you know, before the purchase, then we will go by this. Then certainly the buyer will have a claim if we can verify this. Only this example will apply if it is impossible for us to verify whether the defect happened with the buyer or the seller. Only if it is impossible. Yes. That's why my own preference is to go with the seller, not the buyer. My own preference is to accept the seller's claim, not the buyer's claim. There are many arguments that can be stated in favor of this position. The seller's claim, not the buyer's claim. Yes, ma'am. Yes, of course. You're allowed because you're allowed to combine Dhuhr and Asr before you reach home because you're still a traveler. You certainly have the rulings of a traveler as long as you are a traveler. Huh? Whatever you guys want. If we can do 10 more minutes of questions and answers, if you want, or, huh? No, you should have ended the video when we ended. This is all, yeah.